Today, we look at what comes next for President-elect Joe Biden and for the outgoing President Donald Trump. In the end, it came down to the state in which Joe Biden was born, where The Guardian's Nina Lacani watched as the slow count of postal votes finally swung Pennsylvania from red to blue.
It's 11:30 in the morning on Saturday, and Pennsylvania has just been called for Joe Biden. That means that Joe Biden is on his way to the White House. Pennsylvania did it.
The Fox News decision desk can now project that former Vice President Joe Biden will win.
The moment the entire country has been waiting for after a very close race.
CNN projects Joseph R. Biden Jr. is elected the 46th president of the United States.
And with that, among tens of millions, a tangible sense of relief that swept like a wave across many parts of the country, and particularly through its major cities. From Washington, D.C., through Atlanta, to New York, Chicago, to L.A., San Francisco.
When I say Joe, you say Biden. Joe!
Biden.
Joe!
Biden.
When I say Kavanaugh, you say Harris. Kavanaugh!
Harris.
Kavanaugh!
Harris.
And, of course, Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania itself.
USA!
USA! USA!
It had finally happened. Joe Biden declared president-elect.
I pledge to be a president who seeks not to divide, but unify. Who doesn't see red states and blue states, only sees the United States.
And with him, Kamala Harris, the first woman and the first person of both Black and South Asian heritage to become vice president.
But while I may be the first woman in this office, I will not be the last.
It's a huge victory, but with both Joe Biden and Donald Trump winning more votes than any previous presidential candidates, the US feels as divided as ever.
For all those of you who voted for President Trump, I understand the disappointment tonight. I've lost a couple times myself, but now, let's give each other a chance.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, can Joe Biden unite America? David Smith is The Guardian's Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief. You've been scrutinising every twist and turn of this election. You've had to write a number of times that Joe Biden is poised to become the next president-elect. We do now have that result. And it is a huge vote for both candidates. Why do you think that happened?
I think that turnout reflects the very high stakes nature of this election.
Proud citizens like you help build this country. And together we are taking back our country. We are returning power to you, the American people.
Both sides painted it in existential terms. Democrats warned that if Trump won again, that would be the end of democracy.
This is not just an election between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. This is an election between Donald Trump and democracy.
Trump tried to make the arguments that if Joe Biden won, it would be the end of America as we know it.
Our country could never be the same country if they win because they're radicalized left.
Unlike many of his predecessors, Trump was a uniquely polarizing figure. He has this uncanny ability to energize and mobilize his own base. And right to the end, he was doing four or five campaign rallies a day, building huge enthusiasm there.
We are one movement, one people, one family, and one glorious nation under God.
And he did indeed increase his total number of votes from 2016. But at the same time, there was a huge swathe of the country horrified by Trump, absolutely determined that America would not repeat the mistake of 2016 as they saw it. And I think that's why you saw people turn out in their millions to vote, sometimes in difficult circumstances with the pandemic. They knew just how much was on the line.
Donald Trump was at his golf course in Virginia when the results came through.
Thank you, Mr. President. We love you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
We love you.
You have a great life, right?
Yes.
As we're recording this, he hasn't conceded. Tell me what happens now for Biden.
Biden gave his victory speech in Wilmington, Delaware on Saturday night.
My fellow Americans.
You could already see his Secret Service detail has been stepped up, as it is for presidents-elect. And Biden is straight to work on a transition plan. So his staff get government-issued laptops and phones for secure communications. There's a no-fly zone above his residence in Wilmington. Hard to know what cooperation the outgoing administration will give, but the Biden team does have an office already officially set aside for transition work.
And of course, COVID-19 is going to be one of the big issues that Biden will need to deal with from January. Tell me about what's in his in-tray.
Yeah, I think top of the in-tray is bringing the coronavirus pandemic under control, even as this vote count has been going on. More than 100,000 cases a day. It's kind of a worst-case scenario heading into winter.
Americans have called upon us to marshal the forces of decency, the forces of fairness, to marshal the forces of science and the forces of hope in the great battles of our time. The battle to control the virus, the battle to build prosperity, the battle to secure your family's health care, the battle to achieve racial justice and root out systemic racism in this country.
It's a very tough inheritance that he has. You know, in 2009, Barack Obama faced the Great Recession, but Biden's burden is even greater.
And in the longer term, he has a clear mandate now. Do we know what he wants to do in policy terms?
Well, first on Monday, he's actually going to announce a coronavirus task force.
On Monday, I will name a group of leading scientists and experts as transition advisors to help take the Biden-Harris COVID plan and convert it into an action blueprint that will start on January the 20th.
With executive orders, he'll try to rejoin the Paris Climate Accords. In foreign policy terms, Biden wants to give the message that America is back and rebuild some of the old alliances. I think if he can, Biden will try to reinstate the Iran nuclear deal in some shape or form. I think probably Asia is a higher priority than Europe these days because Trump has put China on the agenda and Biden will have to deal with that. But within Europe, the Biden administration will probably be leaning more towards the European Union and will regret no longer having the UK as a conduit, if you like. He'll also rejoin the World Health Organization, reverse Trump's bans on some Muslim majority countries, try to reinstate the program on Dreamers. These are people who have brought as children to the US illegally, trying to find a pathway to citizenship for them. These executive orders, these reversals of what Trump did, will be the relatively smooth part. What becomes more difficult and more ambitious is rebuilding that economy, investing in infrastructure, which has been neglected for decades in America. Biden has ambitions for a $2 trillion plan for the climate crisis, including eliminating carbon emissions from the electricity sector by 2035.
We have a moral obligation to deal with it. Our health and our jobs are at stake.
He wants to root out systemic racism, and in his speech on Saturday night, he noted how the African-American community had his back during the election campaign and how he will always have their back.
And especially for those moments when this campaign was at its lowest ebb, the African-American community stood up again for me. You always have my back, and I'll have yours.
But so much of this depends on the US Senate.
Let's talk about that, because clearly Elections for Congress have also been going on. The Democrats have held on to the House of Representatives, although they have lost seats. What is the state of play in the Senate race?
The election for the Senate is very finely poised. As things stand, it looks very much like we're going to end up with a situation of the Republicans holding 50 seats and the Democrats holding 48 seats, and there are 100 in total. So everything will come down to two seats in Georgia because of the special rules there. They were very close this week, so there's going to be special runoff elections in early January. Now, if Democrats can win both of those, that will obviously bring the total to 50-50 even split. And so on big divisive votes, the casting vote would go to the president of the Senate, who is the US vice president, and that, of course, is Kamala Harris, which means that Democrats effectively would have the majority there. However, it is still an uphill climb because those special elections are taking place in Georgia, which is usually regarded as a red state.
Across the country, the Republicans seem to have performed better in the Senate than in the presidential race. And there is a very good chance that the Democrats are not going to end up with 50 senators in January. What would that mean for Biden, having to deal with a Republican-controlled Senate?
A lot of the things he wants to do would be on hold because it would all go through the office of Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, Republican, who famously obstructed Barack Obama's legislative agenda.
Why don't you get a drink with Mitch McConnell, they ask. Really? Why don't you get a drink with Mitch McConnell?
And has been a strong ally of Donald Trump.
Our country owes a great debt of thanks to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. We appreciate it very much, Mitch. Thank you.
So, for example, if Biden wanted to reverse Trump's tax cuts that generally favored the rich, McConnell could block that. If Biden wanted to build up the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare, difficult to do with McConnell standing in the way. And the problem, more deeply, is that we could just have a bitter standoff between the White House and the Senate, more dysfunction, which many people would say has been overwhelming for the last decade or so and has actually fed that frustration for the rest of the country that Washington gets nothing done and is broken. And that's arguably fed the forces of Trumpism and led people to say, let's blow up the system.
Just one question on that. Biden has a long career in Congress. If anyone knows how to do deals, he does. And he has a long friendship with Mitch McConnell. Does that mean he has more chance of getting things through?
Yes, I think Joe Biden is better placed than many of the other Democrats who ran for president. He clinched the presidency on the 48th anniversary of his election to the Senate when he was just 29 years old.
The youngest new face in the U.S. Senate next year will be that of Democrat Joseph Biden of Delaware. So young, in fact, that at the time of his election on November 7th, Biden was not yet old enough to serve.
During his very long Senate career, he famously worked with Republicans, for example, Senator John McCain of Arizona.
My name's Joe Biden. I'm a Democrat. And I love John McCain.
Less happily, certainly to his critics, he even worked with segregationists in his time. But a lot of his whole pitch has been that he can work across the aisle, bring Washington politicians together, bring the country together. And so you suspect he and Mitch McConnell could actually have reasonable conversations. So you see some room for maneuver there. There are also some Republicans who are less Trumpian, if you like, such as Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, and Mitt Romney. So on certain issues, on certain votes, it might be possible to heel some of those off to the Biden cause.
So on the one hand, Biden is facing the possibility of having to negotiate hard with people on the right. And yet a major part of this huge coalition that has voted for him are the Democrats on the left, the progressives who came behind him despite loving figures like Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. he'll come under pressure from them, won't he?
Oh, I think he'll come under instant pressure even before he's sworn in. I mean, what was interesting to watch during this election campaign was just how united Democrats were, more so than in 2016. Bernie Sanders and others really got on board with the idea that Trump posed a fundamental threat to democracy and his defeat was absolutely paramount. But once that's out of the way, I think the old divisions will reemerge. Indeed, already with Democrats suffering some losses in the House of Representatives, some debates have broken out and some more moderate Democrats have grumbled that using words like socialism or defunding the police could do them further damage, and some saying we must never use the word socialism again. So this election leaves both the Democrats and the Republicans facing a real sort of identity crisis.
Coming up, what's next for Donald Trump? Of course, before we get anywhere near Joe Biden having to negotiate with the Senate, we're going to go through a period that could be quite bumpy. As we record, Donald Trump is showing no signs of conceding. Tell me what's been happening and is it getting through to the public?
Donald Trump still appears to be in total denial about the outcome of this election and the fact he is about to be consigned to history as an impeached one-term president. During the week, while the votes were still being counted, he appeared at the White House podium to proclaim himself the winner.
If you count the legal votes, I easily win.
And claim fraud and promise to go to court. And many historians and others said it was a total disgrace and a distortion of truth. The Trump campaign is continuing to file multiple lawsuits, which legal experts say have little or no merit. They're based on things like observers not being allowed into view counts or a few hundred ballots here and there turning up, but none of it seems to have any credibility, culminating in farce where Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York, had a press conference in Philadelphia on Saturday. Trump initially announced it being at the Four Seasons, which everyone would assume would be the hotel there. But then the Four Seasons Hotel announced it was nothing to do with them. It turned out this press conference was happening at a company called Four Seasons Total Landscaping, kind of in the middle of nowhere and near a pawn shop and crematorium.
Wow, what a beautiful day. Thank you.
With him, witnesses, he said, to mass electoral fraud.
That they were uniformly deprived of their right to inspect any single part of the mail-in ballot.
It did look quite farcical, but are there things that Trump could do over the next few days, weeks?
He really seems to be running out of options, and some American media outlets are reporting that, you know, the mood in the White House swings between despondency and defiance, but that Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, senior advisor, is advising him that the game is up, he should concede. Trump seems to be out of legal tools. Yes, he's firing off tweets and emails. Now his tweets get flagged by Twitter as providing misleading information or contradicting the official election count. Even Fox News, very loyal to Trump, declared Biden the winner. I mean, there are still some outliers, some opinion hosts on there who are articulating the president's case, but many now being silent.
Do we have any idea what Donald Trump, after he finally accepts the results or is forced to do so, will do next?
We don't know for sure. There are plenty of theories. Back in 2016, when he was expected to lose, there were a lot of rumours that Trump would start his own TV network. And the fact that there may be some sort of divorce from Fox News going on now, and certainly Trump criticises Fox, may be laying the foundation for that. My own speculation is that Trump, of course, who was on The Apprentice for a decade, the reality TV show as a businessman, could, you know, do some reality show. But, I mean, the other lingering question is, will he walk away from politics altogether or actually stay very engaged as a major looming presence in the Republican Party and at least stir the pot and threaten to run for president again in 2024. I think he would be the only the second person in history to serve one term and then lose and then actually win and go back to the White House.
And obviously, Republicans will start thinking about 2024. It would be a bit soon for Democrats to be doing the same, but there is a suggestion that Biden could be a one-term president. He's not exactly young. He has made that historic choice of Kamala Harris as his vice president. Is there a chance that she will be the person who the party looks to next?
Yes, I think Biden has talked about being a transitional figure. He may serve one term, he may serve two, but Harris is clearly in a very strong position to potentially succeed him.
And to the children of our country, regardless of your gender, our country has sent you a clear message. Dream with ambition, lead with conviction, and see yourselves in a way that others may not, simply because they've never seen it before. But know that we will applaud you every step of the way.
She would probably not go unchallenged. There would be a Democratic primary. But she's already made a great start. I mean, she gave a speech before Biden on Saturday night, walked on stage wearing all white, a sort of nod to the suffragist movement, spoke movingly about her mother coming from India as an immigrant to the US, spoke about little girls around the country, seeing Harris in that position about to become the first female vice president of the US. She has tremendous goodwill at the moment, but is not least for reasons of gender and race, and her home state, California, is sadly a target as well for some of the more poisonous right-wing rhetoric.
You've talked about how Joe Biden has responded to what is very clearly a divided country. You've talked about the rhetoric of unity and the desire to both be a president for Trump supporters, but also be willing to compromise in government. He's talked about being decent and polite. And we know that he has said that the scenes at that far-right rally in Charlottesville were what originally made him want to stand as a centrist candidate. In reality, how hard is it going to be to try to take over this divided country?
Oh, it'll be incredibly difficult because he's inheriting these multiple crises around the economy and the pandemic and racial injustice. But there was a hope that this election would send a clear message about America heading in one direction or the other. Instead, it just seemed to reaffirm and ratify these divisions, and America's identity crisis continues. Now, I think in all of that, Biden is one of the best hopes of providing some kind of unity. He comes from fairly humble white working class origins. He won back some of those communities in this election, states like Michigan and Wisconsin. And again, in terms of racial inequality, this is the year of the death of George Floyd, the racial justice protests. He needs to heal some of those wounds, reform the police, and also attack that issue of the white working class voter in a small town who feels left behind, who thought Trump was going to be their savior and was disappointed.
David Smith, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was David Smith, The Guardian's Washington, D.C. bureau chief, and at the very start, Nina Locarni in Pennsylvania. My thanks to both of them. Do go to the website at theguardian.com to follow their reporting and that of all our Guardian US colleagues, including the rolling live blog. I don't know about you, but I have been refreshing it obsessively. Thank you for listening to Today in Focus. That's it for now. This episode was produced by Courtney Youssef and Hannah Moore. Sound design was by Nicholas Cox. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.